You're listening to episode 330 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. What day is it, Max?
I know, it's hard to tell these days. I think it's Thursday. No, it's, yes, I think it's Thursday night.
Yeah, it's Thursday night. If it wasn't for our podcast, I'm not really sure I really would know what day it is. At least I know Mondays and Thursdays.
That's right.
So hopefully everyone's doing well out there in quarantine land as the world here in the States starts to open up. But we got a lot of good news for you. We've got hotels and beer, UFOs, possibly UASs, distance learning, owls and hummingbirds making drones better. Are whales fat enough to breed? Only a drone knows. And a good one for the You're Grounded files. So, Max, should we get started with this little puppy?
David, let's get started.
Well, our first story comes from DroneLife.com. Passenger Drone Hotel. Ehang and LN Holdings make it a reality. Ehang plans to create a passenger drone hotels in China. This will be great when we can go to China to visit these hotels. But what are we talking about, Max? A drone hotel kind of sounds creepy.
I know. Is that a hotel where drones check in? Or no, it's a hotel.
The drones check in, but don't check
but
out.
Don't check out. They don't fly out. Ehang, of course, has been developing and flying a passenger drone, a small one. And the idea here is that guests at the hotel would arrive and depart via Ehang's passenger drones. And then while staying at the hotel, they could take the drones out for sightseeing, for visiting the area, going to local destinations. And they've actually got the first one planned for a coastal resort district in Guangzhou. And as the headline states, Ehang has partnered with LN Holdings Group, which is a tourism and hotel development group.
So what we have here, folks, is Disney World for UASs. It's a small drone after all.
Yeah. Now, of course, the Chinese always have a plan, and the plans typically involve the Chinese government as well, and that's the case here. And as it's reported, Ehang and the Chinese government have an agreement to establish Guangzhou as, quote, China's first and the world's leading UAM smart city. So this is an interesting commitment, I think, David. Ehang has got the product that they would like to, get out there in the marketplace, and the Chinese government is interested in ensuring that China remains in the forefront of unmanned aircraft. And this is a clever way to get people involved in this and using these drones.
And there'll be a little guy in a bell tower going, "The drone, the drone." But I think it's an interesting way to get technology out to the general public. You know, it's a different way to present the whole flying car. It's interesting, you know, when you'll arrive to the hotel via the drone, go sightseeing. So it's Uber. I mean, it's Uber or taxi. You know, if they broaden it out, you know, you could fly off to dinner, you know, and fly back home. So to get the whole concept and the familiarity to operating with these new vehicles, you know.
Yeah, and it's not just a transportation service. I think you see a lot of that in other areas looking at urban air mobility. It's just about how do you move people between points. This includes that, but it also rolls in the hotel, the stay, the accommodations, which makes it a larger package. The founder, chairman, and CEO of Ehang had some interesting comments, but he talked about building Guangzhou into a global air mobility pilot city. Now, notice pilot city. So this is
put on bump rim shot.
Yeah, not planned as a one off, at least at this point. And he says, and further promotes the commercialization of the UAM ecosystem.
That's an interesting, I mean, that really is an interesting statement. You're creating an environment for these to operate, you know, not just to be more integrated.
Yeah. So I think this is pretty interesting. I don't see a timetable here, but we do see a promotional video. We'll have that in the show notes. It's a brief video, and it just, you know, it talks about Ehang and LN Holdings building the world's first UAM theme hotel. So you can take a look at that in the show notes.
But let's talk about other important things. We've got the hotel stay now, but I think we need to go out for beers.
That's
an
right.
Irish pub is using drones to fly beer to its customers during COVID-19. This was from IrishCentral.com. McKeever's Bar and Lounge outside Dublin are closed during the pandemic, but the customers are still thirsty for a pint and have been for the last 150 years. But don't let 150 years of pubbery go to waste. They're using drones. How?
Yeah, they're flying beer and wine to patrons, which is, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. They have no business. Their doors are closed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And so they've been flying drones. The nephew-in-law of the current owner is the drone pilot, and they're out making deliveries of beers.
Not only beers, but you can get your bangers and mash and all of the other things with your pint, because it's important. When you're having the pub experience, you have to have the food also. So it's not just beers, it's snacks. So, but it's kind of a fun way. I mean, they're not able to open up yet, but they are using it to keep their Irish and their fans happy, because, you know, us Irishmen, we need a good pub hit every so often.
Are you an honorary Irishman this week?
No, I'm not an honorary Irishman. My mother's maiden name was O'Neill.
Oh.
I'm 50% Irish.
I didn't know that. All right.
So, yes, with O'Neills and McPherson, I'm Irish, Scotch, and Dutch.
Nice. Well, the drone deliveries bring in some revenue for this pub, where it would have none otherwise, which is good. Obviously, not as much as they would if they were open, but good nonetheless. There's also an interesting point made in this article. It says another advantage of this is it keeps the pub in people's minds for when it reopens. And I'm thinking that the patrons of this pub probably don't need drone deliveries to keep the pub in mind for when it reopens. But hey.
If it's anything like my local diner, believe me, it's in my mind every day. I miss going down there on Sunday mornings. But it does keep the pub active. I mean, we've talked a lot about this here in the States. Besides that, you know, it's one of the slogans you hear a lot is take out to give back, because a lot of these restaurants aren't allowed to keep people in them right now. But you can go and take out, you know, and you're giving it back to them the way they've always treated you. You know, a pub is family, you know, like everything else. So I think you're right, Max, that it's a little over, but still, at least you sort of get to interact with your clientele, which is really good.
Yep.
And speaking of interactions, how about the U.S. Navy releases incident reports on the U.S. Navy UFO encounters? We haven't talked about this. So, I mean, we've talked about UAS as being UFOs in the Northwest. But in this case, this was a big deal. This came out, that these leaked videos came out about F-18s in the Navy on both coasts, the Atlantic and the Pacific, interacting with unidentified aerial vehicles, i.e. UFOs. But some of the conclusions think that maybe they're drones.
Yeah, that's right. So the Pentagon ended up declassifying these leaked videos because they were out there anyway. And now what we have here is the Navy released some of the related incident reports, and they describe, or many of them describe, these as unmanned aerial systems, like you say, which is what the military means for drones. And there are three examples given of what's in the incident reports. One is about a June 2013 encounter. And in the incident report, we see the aircraft was white in color and approximately the size and shape of a drone or missile. But there's some other references to drone-like UFOs.
The November 2013 incident was an aircraft described as having a 5-foot wingspan. The aircraft was determined to be a UAS. And last,
from March 2014, quote, the unknown aircraft appeared to be small in size, approximately the size of a suitcase, silver in color. So from those early, the videos of the F-18 encounters, I mean, I didn't really have any sense for how large the objects were. Because I couldn't really tell how far away they were or anything like that. But what we see here is these things were really, really small. And I guess, is that why they're looking at them as UAS or is drones, just simply because of the size?
I think they're looking at them because they can't explain them. If you watch those videos, drones don't fly like that. I'm don't know what, if they are, there's somebody's technology that's well advanced of everybody else's. So it's sort of, it's kind of odd that it's the default is their UASs. So I guess we'll see. It was an interesting, it's an interesting thing that now that they're releasing the reports. Now, keep in mind, folks, that these aren't the conclusion of the reports. These are,
yeah,
you know, they're not saying definitively that, yes, that was a drone, but they're saying these are the aspects that we're being told by the pilots and the footage, and these are possible conclusions. But it's, I think the jury's still out. If you go watch those videos, you can write us and tell me what kind of drones are able to do like 90 degree turns on a dime, you know, and fly out at the mileage, miles per hour that these things say. But we'll move on. Max and I, you and I have been doing video conference calls long before it was fashionable because we've been recording this show. But one of the things that a lot of everyone's getting used to is distance learning, but it seems to be affecting even drone programs. And this was from Commercial UAV News. Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University worldwide campus offers distance learning for some of their drone programs. So staring into a computer to learn how to fly drones, huh?
Yeah, and this is about the, particularly about the Bachelor of Science in Unmanned Systems Applications, which is a program offered by Embry-Riddle, ERAU. And the program chair for that is Christian Janke, and he was interviewed for this article. And it's noted that Embry-Riddle has two residential campuses, but they also have this worldwide campus, which actually has a fair amount of previous distance learning experience. And as most of the students under this program are located around the world, this lets them study, or gives them the opportunity to study online instead of at a campus. Although it's noted that some of these things must be done in person. It's not a complete bachelor program online. Things like drone pilot exams need to be done in person. So there are some exceptions. But Embry-Riddle, of course, is a prestigious university with some really, really great programs. And so this was kind of a natural for them to be able to provide so much of the unmanned systems training or education via remote means.
And Christian basically says, everyone who operates a drone needs to be aware of the fact that this is related to aviation. If you're flying a drone, you're participating in the airspace, and that means you need to follow certain rules. I believe no matter what their background might be, for anyone operating a drone, training is very important and should always relate to the achievements and learnings from manned aviation. when it comes to safety and risk assessment and professionalism. We call it airmanship, but it's a very important thing to follow. We've had a really good relationship with Emery Riddle, with Airplane Geeks, and as far as UAV Digest. And they're really growing the experience about being a drone operator. There's more to know than just getting up and flying and take pictures, you know, and airmanship is incredibly important.
Yeah. And Christian Janke is actually in our Slack team. So he's a listener of this podcast, and he also hangs out in our Slack team.
We'll move on to the wildlife portion of our audio content. How the wings of owls and hummingbirds inspire drones, wind turbines, and other technology. This was TechExplorer.com. Biomimicry draws inspiration from natural inventions to design and improve upon our current technologies. And the first one is
the hummingbird. So this was pretty fascinating. When you look at hummingbirds carefully, you see that they have really large wing muscles that are needed in order to continuously flap their wings that lets them hover and maneuver in ways that other flying creatures cannot. But they also have a long chest bone, and that provides the surface area for those large muscles. As you may know from slow motion photography, they beat their wings in sort of a figure eight shape. And all of this takes lots and lots of energy. There's a video that we'll also put in the show notes that shows hummingbirds hovering in air in slow motion. And you really get to see a sense for sort of the complicated operation of these little birds. But science, what's the phrase? Mimics nature?
I guess. I don't know. What made the video, as far as I was concerned, was, besides it was really fascinating, was you can't go wrong with a David Attenborough narration.
Yeah, he's always good.
There's something about that. But we've talked a lot, actually, Max, you know, you and I are both kind of partial to this, about learning from animals and learning from nature as far as UASs go. And how scientists look at birds and owls, you know, and then try to transfer that technology or that ability into UASs or drones. So the application is AeroVironment's Nano Hummingbird prototype for DARPA. And of course, DARPA is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, that place that all of our money goes so that the military can have new toys. And the drone mimics the flight of hummingbirds, and they can go into normally otherwise unreachable locations. It's small, fast, and agile, and can hover.
That's right. And we have a video of that as well. It's an older video because the AeroVironment Nano Hummingbird has been around for a while, and we'll have that in the show notes as well. But David, the hummingbird isn't the only flying creature that might help with some mankind technology ideas.
You mean you're talking about my alma maters?
The owl?
The owl is my alma mater. I'm a temple owl.
Ah.
But what owls contribute is owls fly very silently, and it's because of their wing structure. Owl wing feathers have leading edge serrations that break up the turbulence. And the fringes on the end of the feathers disperse the turbulence to reduce noise. So they're going to make drones quieter.
Yeah, and other things too, like wind turbines and fans. The video that we've got of the owl flying, it's titled, How Does an Owl Fly So Silently? It's really fascinating because they first recorded a pigeon or something in the video flying from one point to another point. And then they recorded an owl flying the same course. And the recording of the owl in flight was almost entirely silent, as opposed to the pigeon, which you could hear the flapping and the noise and all of that. So, if we can draw upon what owls do naturally, you apply those to wind turbines or other bladed items, that could be really beneficial.
Yeah, and if you think about an owl hunting at night, they don't want their prey to hear them coming. So nature has given them the ability to have some stealth.
You know? Right.
And of course, besides batteries, I think noise is one of the number one challenges for drones.
Yeah, I would agree.
Especially for military applications. So what we need now is to figure out how to take a hummingbird and combine it with an owl so we get the optimal UAS.
But yes.
We'll see if that happens. But, we were talking about small birds and medium birds. Let's go to the opposite end of the scale, which is I measure drones to find out if they're fat enough to breed.
Which is almost a clickbait kind of a title. I mean, that's just really, how can you not look into that,
Well,
it's not a criticism. It's just
no, it's not. And I figure after our whale snot episode, I figured this couldn't be any worse.
Yep.
So Southern University PhD candidates and scientists plan to use drones to find out and measure the length and width of whales. So many whales and dolphins spend little time at the surface of the water, so they're hard to find and study. Think about how hard it is to assess a whale body size and condition. Makes perfect sense. But what I didn't realize was they gain weight or they lose weight when they're going in their various cycles from their feeding ground to their breeding ground.
Yeah, so they can use regular photogrammetry techniques to capture video of the whales. They're planning on looking at humpback and pygmy blue whales. This is around Australia. And they expect to fly the drone about 20 meters over the water. They figure they'll have about 10 minutes flight duration, which kind of gives you a clue as to what they're flying. And then they'll take the video, still images from the video, and calculate the size and volume of the whales.
That tells you the determination of the whale. The whale, on its migration from its feeding grounds in the Antarctic to its birthing grounds in the warmer waters, they tend to lose weight. So the females, if they retain the weight, they're able to deliver their calves better and they're healthier. And of course, drones are less expensive than aircraft. But we also got a video from National Geographic. Blue whales lunge for dinner in a beautiful drone footage. So we'll have that link in the show notes. That was kind of cool. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, that was gorgeous. This article itself has a lot of really, really nice still images of whales. And this National Geographic video is just really, really spectacular. It's several whales feeding on krill, and it's worth checking out.
Max, as much as I love these flyovers, I'm really getting annoyed at them because they bring out the worst in people. As much as I hate to say it, but when the Blue Angels and the Thunderbirds flew over here in Philadelphia, yes, it was a beautiful sight, but then there was a bunch of people not keeping their distances, not wearing masks. And we did have a little bit of a spike go up in cases of coronavirus. That being said, this is really dumb, which is a new one for the You're Grounded files. Drone flies dangerously close to Blue Angels in Detroit, America's strong flyover. I just couldn't believe this.
There's a video taken from a drone of the flyover, and there's several scenes, several passes, and so forth. And one of them in particular shows the Blue Angels formation flying really, really dangerously close to the drone. And the name Giovanni Lucia has been associated with this video. And for the Aviationist, which has this article, they did some searching around on that name, and they found some other drone videos, some aerial videos of Detroit that were taken at night, which is not, you know, you should not be doing that either. So it's not certain that Giovanni is the pilot of the drone, but it's kind of being indicated that's the case.
And if they fight him, they need to fry his butt. This is just stupid, you know, and God forbid he hit one of the angels. This was over metropolitan Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, so not only was he endangering the pilots that are trying to do something good in this time of need, you know, but it makes my blood boil, you know, and the FAA needs to find him and take him out. I mean, and I say that by slapping a huge fine on him and go from there, because the quote evidently that's out there is that, especially about the Detroit night flying, was, "I may have broken some FAA rules tonight," which implies he knows what he's doing is wrong, dead wrong.
Yeah. And as we record this anyway, you can actually watch this video if you'd like. Over at Moss Photography, they copied it off of this guy's Facebook page before he took it down. And it's available there. But Moss Photography has a little disclaimer on there, which they were forced to do. They had to shut off the comments because it was out of control. He says, "To reiterate, this is not my video. I simply uploaded it. So please quit wasting the FAA's time by reporting me and quit sending me nasty emails. It is not my video." Now, he's as equally outraged. He says that this was one of the most irresponsible, ignorant, reckless, moronic, outright dangerous things I've ever seen with a drone. I hope the FAA and the Navy come fry Mr. Giovanni Lucia's butt. So I think, you know, Giovanni is, you know, maybe in hiding right now, maybe wisely, but I suspect that we're going to hear more about that individual coming. Now, we should say that, you know, not to condemn the guy, it looks bad, but it may not have been him, but he may have somehow been the one who, you know, put the video up or whatever. But nevertheless, it doesn't look good for the guy.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't really feel sad for Moss Photography either.
No, they're fine. All they did was said, "Hey, you know, if you want to see it." And it's,
I know, but still, that being said, I still don't think, I think he posted it to his website and now he's complaining that he's getting a lot of, you know, it's sort of really what you should have done was notified the FAA and not post it. While he wasn't part of the action, in a warped sort of way, he was promoting the action. And I think, you know, he's a little upset that everyone's a little upset, you know, but we in this industry have to self-police, you know, and if you see something like this, you need to report it. I'm sorry, but this is just recklessly dangerous. It's almost as bad as going 95 miles an hour and dodging in and out of traffic. You know, you are jeopardizing other people, not just yourself.
Definitely the action was bad. It's although the guy does know how to do some good aerial photography. The video that he captured is actually pretty good.
It's magnificent, yeah. But
that doesn't, that's just an observation that in no way justifies the actions. So on that less than entirely pleasant note, I think we'll draw this one to a conclusion. And thank you for listening to the UAV Digest. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. And the show notes for this episode are at the UAVDigest.com/330. We do have a lot of videos this week. So if you go over to the website, you'll be able to see that EHang video. We have some really fascinating videos of the hummingbirds and owls, as well as that National Geographic whale video. So take a look at the show notes for this episode.
And come on, everybody needs a good dose of David Attenborough. I mean, the hummingbird video narrated by David Attenborough. You just, if you need a stress reliever, David Attenborough narrating anything is just perfect. But you can also find us, like Chris did, on the UAV Digest Slack team. And you do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Join the conversation. It keeps getting bigger and bigger, Max. I think we've created a little bit of a monster. I can't keep up with it. And of course, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest and on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening. Stay safe and be well.